Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Thanks so much for listening to this podcast from Live the Promise. There are many more podcasts available up on the website at myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible. Thank you. Much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. So glad you tuned in. This is hour two. Every single month, we have different features. We've got Bible Answers with Dr. Ron Rhodes. We've got Redemption Stories with Liz Curtis Higgs, and we have Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. Today is that day. We welcome your questions. We've got a backlog. We're trying to catch up. We're also doing something cool called Facebook Live. Are we still at it, Kyle? Are we still going? We're still going. So if you want to hop onto Facebook, you can see us live. You can see Dr. Troy's very nice purple shirt. You can see, well, I don't know if you'll see my dear sister, Chrissy, but you should give her a little flash because she's adorable. That's probably vain of me to say since we look exactly alike. my beautiful niece, Katie, and she's watching the Facebook page and she's feeding the questions. And people, friends who called in, Carol and Anne and Connie, I'm going to get to those questions in just a moment. And Veronica, I think we touched on yours, but let's go to some Facebook Live questions.
Yeah, Rosemary said, I am 65, and I find even with over-the-counter sleep aid, I only sleep for an hour or two before I wake up. I walk 30 minutes a day and eat pretty healthy. Is there a supplement that I can take to improve my sleep pattern?
Yeah, that's a tricky one all by itself. The answer is you can try melatonin, and 2 or 3 milligrams is all you need. It's not one of those things where you want to do more. But melatonin, if it's already been tried, 2 hours generally indicates that you're getting woken up in the middle of your sleep cycle. So there's a 45-minute sleep cycle and a 4-hour sleep cycle. And if you're getting woken up in the middle of that sleep cycle, that's more of a sleep disorder. So it could be something like sleep apnea, or it could be more commonly an upper airway resistance syndrome or a REM sleep disorder. The REM sleep disorder has to be fixed first. And I would think this is an adrenal problem. So if I got a little bit more information, if at 65, as postmenopausal, your adrenal glands basically are involved with this, which means once you stop the ovaries stop making estrogen, it falls all on the adrenal glands to start to make that. And so they become very stressed out. So any type of sugar consumption can disrupt the sleep, and you can have low blood sugar in the middle of deep sleep. So managing the sugar, even though the diet is healthy, not that I don't trust you, it's just still do due diligence to see if it's a low blood sugar problem or a sleep disorder. Melatonin, L-theanine, those are things that you can try to take if you haven't already. If you try those and it doesn't work, generally speaking, and this is what I usually find anyway, it's a problem with the adrenal glands and or sleep disorder that has to be addressed.
And that sleep thing, we've talked about this many times before with Dr. Troy in the show. If you're not getting the deep sleep, you're not going to have optimal health. And I've had issues with that. I had a hysterectomy in my 20s, so I had sleep stuff my whole adult life. And we've worked on that one. And I got to tell you one thing we've found. He also sells doTERRA oils. And I know there's Young Living, doTERRA, whichever one. But a friend of mine told me about this little mixture. And I have to tell you, because between, you know, the Epsom salt baths and this regular bedtime and doing all those things, this little combo has been absolutely amazing to me. And I just got to tell you, vetiver, lavender, and breathe. Those are doTERRA. Now, Young Living would have a similar, but it's 1 to 2 drops of vetiver, 4 drops of lavender, 5 to 6 of breathe. And that combination knocks a lot of people out, I'm just saying. So anyway, what do you say, Katie?
Yeah, and another one we have is Eva Marie. And she said, what can I do to strengthen my respiratory system? And how is it that I get it so frequently?
So to strengthen the respiratory system, what we're really doing is it's use. You got to think of it like a muscle. So it's all about whether or not it's able to expand and contract. Number one, It's also a filter. So our lungs are like a filter where you exchange oxygen for carbon dioxide. So the filter can get dirty, just like water filter, fish filter, fish tank. You got to change the filters, right? So very important to do breathing exercise. Deep breath in through the nose, blow out through the lungs twice as long. If you have a measuring tape at home, put it around your chest and pull tight and then take a deep breath in and all the way out. That was me taking a deep breath in all the way out.
I'm following.
Yeah. And then measure it. And then try and improve it by a couple millimeters. And if you can make a 6 to 10 millimeter difference, that's going to help with lung function a lot. Now, the other thing is fasting helps a lot and making sure you don't get constipated, because believe it or not, when you get constipated and the lymph system becomes congested, your lungs do not actually filter as efficiently. So we need lots of water. We need clean air. That's why smokers don't do as well when it comes to running and stuff like that. And we need to push and stress our lungs a little bit here and there. So deep breathing is good for a nice relaxing one. But going for a sprint or doing something that really wins us for a short period of time is actually very, very effective.
And it's good for the lymph system too, right, Dr.
Great for the lymph system,
mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Kind of a burst, right?
Yes, definitely.
Got another one for me, hon?
Martha says that she's a one-year survivor of colon cancer. She has an ostomy, and her red blood cell count is still very low. She said, I take an iron supplement 3 times a day with an orange. I have no problems anywhere else. Is there anything else I can do to increase my red blood cell count?
Well, that's a good question and a very challenging scenario. But what I'm going to say is a couple things here. So first of all, you want to try and reestablish the probiotic biome. And what that means is we have a forest of good bacteria in our digestive tract. And a lot of that bacteria influences our vitamins, especially our B vitamins. And so when it comes to red blood cells, they really require the iron. They require B vitamins as well. And so you want to start with taking good probiotics, consuming fermented food is very, very helpful. And then also getting some very specific energy requirements. You want to just push things a little bit so that your body goes into a mode where it is being asked for more oxygen so that your body starts making more red blood cells. And if you have enough of the raw ingredients, the iron, the protein, and the B vitamins, then you'll start to see the red blood cell count start to go up.
Hey, I have a good idea. Join the Live Free Challenge. We're only like 9 days in, but you exert yourself. Good for you. Good for justice's sake. Okay, do you have any more for us? Okay, keep us posted on that if you would, Katie. You're doing a great job. Okay, let's see. Connie says, I'm a plasma donor and have been pitting edema, retaining fluid in my ankles. Is there a connection between the two? Is it okay for me to be donating?
Well, yeah, pitting edema means there's something going on. We want to make sure that the kidneys and heart are okay. So I would strongly urge you to get that checked out. We need to make sure everything's okay. Something is not. So that's a very distinct sign of dysfunction, and we need to find out what it is. So at this point, I would make it a priority to find out what's causing the pitting edema.
Okay. And let's see. Ann says, what symptoms might a person experience if they're eliminating sugared eating balanced? If they're eliminating sugar, eating balanced protein, good carbs, good fats, no dairy, no sugar, no gluten. I don't totally understand that question. I'm wondering
what type of symptoms? Well, maybe they're probably talking about when you start to pull those things out.
Oh, I see. The detox. What would the symptoms when you start to eliminate the bad stuff?
Yeah.
Okay, got it. Okay.
And that's different for everyone. So some people, yeah. And it really depends on how well you've eaten prior to that. So I'm going to go through a few scenarios here. If you are overweight and have some fat stores, then it's kind of an interesting cycle that can happen because you can actually feel really awful. And anything in the first couple days is withdrawal. So caffeine withdrawal, sugar withdrawal, we become very grumpy on day 2 to 5. And we just should warn our family that we're doing this and we're going to be grumpy. After that, we actually start to feel better. But then by day 7 to 15, if we have weight to lose in the form of fat, then all of a sudden an interesting thing can happen. You can actually start to burn that fat. In order to burn that fat, it releases its contents. And when we become toxic and overburdened, the best insulator in our body to store a toxin is fat. So people will start to release toxins. It's kind of like when they did that nuclear testing here in the United States. They buried it in insulators down in the desert in Nevada. Well, in our body, that goes to fat. That's one of the reasons why women develop breast cancer and breast problems, because any of the toxins that are put on their face in form of makeup or deodorants, stuff like that, that can actually contribute to a toxic burden, and it gets stored in the fat tissue. And so as we lose weight, we actually burn that fat, and those toxins can be released. And now all of a sudden, you've got another toxic reaction. And so that's why we tell people it can be a bit of a roller coaster, ups and downs. Feel really good, a couple days of feel like I've got a little low-grade cold or flu. So generally speaking, if you're lethargic and you feel like you have a flu but you don't have a fever, that's probably a detox reaction, and it can come and go depending on when you're burning the fat, releasing the toxins, or releasing the toxins. Now, if you don't have fat to lose, you might not be consuming enough and you're dealing with a hypoglycemic low blood sugar type of reaction. The difference with that is when you eat food with a low blood sugar, you instantly feel better, and that'll happen right away. When you're going through a detox reaction, it'll be kind of like a flu where you don't feel as good as quickly.
Wow, so interesting. I butchered the question, but his answer was masterful. I love it when that happens. Okay, Carol checks in, says, several years ago in my 30s, I had my gallbladder removed. These days, I'm having some problems in that area. Also, my neck and my head shakes a lot. Could there be a correlation? Carol says that doctors say it's not Parkinson's.
Yeah, so movement disorders can occur in a couple different areas of the brain. And so Parkinson's occurs in the basal ganglia, my favorite area of the brain. And more commonly, we see cerebellar disorders and dystonia and different movement disorders. There can be a correlation between liver dysfunction with liver and gallbladder work together. The gallbladder is basically a storage sac for bile. And so whatever caused the gallbladder problem in the first place never got addressed. They just take the gallbladder out, but they never fixed the actual problem that led to it. So the reality is bile is very important for us for emulsification of fats and the brain. There are some very specific physical conditions that can lead to vestibular problems or problems in the brain that deal with movement disorders or tics and stuff. And they can be dealt with. It's a neurologic component. The liver itself, when we drink too much coffee, sugar, rich acidic foods, that can also cause a problem with this bile system. So if you're a coffee drinker, sugar or tomatoes is one of the other ones, or high fatty food, pull those out of your diet for a week or two and see if the gallbladder stuff goes away.
Interesting. You know, I used to always crave corn tortilla chips, like chips and hummus, because I can't eat gluten, dairy, or soy. So that was my go-to. But as I've been taking micronutrients and a few other things, I have these bone broth protein shakes every morning. The craving is gone. Like, I don't even miss it, and I don't desire it because it's other things are being cared for. Just amazing. Yep. Okay, we got more questions when we come back, but now we can open the phone lines because we caught up on the board here. 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. And hop on Facebook if you're there on our My Faith Radio page, because we're doing Facebook Live. We thought we were going to do it for a half hour, but we're doing this thing for the whole 2 hours, right? 2 hours. Okay. So give us your questions, and my dear Katie will read them. Don't go away. Back in a moment. A great reminder that our help comes from the Lord. And one of the reasons we do this every month, you know, Live the Promise is a deeper life show. We jokingly behind the scenes say it's the no fluff zone because we want to plumb the depths of things, spiritual, faith walk, all those things. But our health is a part of this. Our bodies are the temple of the Holy Spirit. And as a person who's dealt with chronic health issues most of my adult life, but as a person who worked in the fitness industry for 15 years, I care about health. And I just know that some of your choices, if you adjust them just slightly, and some of them are going to be major, the payoff will be so worth it. So we really devote once a month to Dr. Troy to answer your questions. He's so kind. He's a busy, busy man. And he comes just to invest in your life. So I pray that you take some of this advice and see what happens. We will link up Synapse Center on our show page today. So if you want to contact the office directly, you can do that. We're also on Facebook Live today, which is kind of new and fun. And I got my dear niece, Katie, in studio, and my sister, Chrissy, here, too. So Katie's helping us with the Facebook Live questions. What do you got, Katie?
Yeah, Michelle wants to know, can you please speak to ankylosing spondylitis and what can help? I tried really hard there.
Okay, so ankylosing spondylitis is an inflammatory disorder. The challenge is we can help with the inflammation ahead of time, but once the bones have fused in the spine, there's not much we can do. So sometimes surgery is needed to for an area if it's causing some damage. But the thing is, you have to get to the root cause of the inflammation. So there's something causing an inflammatory reaction. It's like an inflammatory arthritis. So it actually, you can identify the source of inflammation. It can be anything. There's 12 different causes. So it could be a food allergy. It can be stress. It can be an inability to detoxify the chemicals from our environment. It can be heavy metals. It can be an excessive amount of hormones that aren't being metabolized properly. It can be, I said stress again. That's important. It can be
it's doubly important.
It can be a genetic disorder with your vitamin D receptor, and it can be change of hormone season. So getting pregnant and getting going through menopause can also be part of it. And so it's a lot of different, and nutritional deficiencies can also be a part of it. It's a lot of different scenarios that can actually set up the whole process. As a nation, we are generally pretty deficient in our anti-inflammatories. Our diet is pro-inflammatory. So there's a lot of omega-6s versus omega-3s. And so we want to get a nice balance between our omega-3, 6, and 9 and get that inflammatory cascade managed. And so we really, in general, just consume inflammatory foods, sugar, coffee, food allergies. Processed food is one of the worst things we can do, because our immune system does not recognize any alterations to the food supply. And the more we change our food, the more damaging it is to our body, not all at once, but just subtly, moment by moment. And after 5, 10, 15 years of that, it really manifests into something that has gotten out of control.
You know, Dr. Troy, one of our guests before, they were talking about a faith and a health detox, and she'd actually said processed foods are the new cocaine. She said, yeah. She goes, this is a strong statement, but I'm standing by it. It's that bad for your body. Would you agree?
I would.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. All right. Katie, what do you got?
Yeah, we have another good one from Jessica. She said, can you speak to depression and anxiety and how it relates to healthy gut? What's the top priority when trying to get to the bottom of it?
Excellent question.
That is a great question. Very, very large connection, too. So they actually call the gut the second brain. And the reason is a lot of our brain chemicals come from the gut. So serotonin, 60% of our serotonin, which when you talk about a lot of the antidepressants, there a lot of them, one of the families is the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. So they basically hold serotonin in the brain longer to the receptor, and that's what gives us a little bit more relief with the medications. The problem is if you're not making serotonin, that doesn't do anything for you. So eventually things will stop working. And so anyone who's been on antidepressant where they're like, it just stopped working. I've been taking it for years and now it doesn't work. Well, the root cause has not been addressed. Intestinal inflammation will decrease your neurotransmitters for the brain. Number two, the more stress you have, either through depression or anxiety, it causes a fight or flight type of response. And then you end up, when you're in fight or flight, you cannot be in rest and digest, which means your sleep disturbance starts to increase and you can't get the neurologic support for the digestive system. And so it's very important to get to be out of fight or flight and into a rest and digest mode as much as possible. And deep, good sleep is very important for that. The number one thing you can do is avoid food allergies and increase your good bacteria and enzymes, exercise to help undo the fight or flight response. Because if your brain is saying fight or flight, like you're being chased by a tiger, the brain is sending signals to your arms and your legs so you can fight or flee. That's not really good radio, right? When I'm like pretending to run and not saying anything. Yeah. Facebook Live got it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But your nerves are literally sending signals to your arms and legs. If you're being chased by a tiger, it's a really bad time to take a nap or sit down and have lunch.
A nice meal.
Right?
So the cells respond in kind then too, right? Because they're kind of bearing down in fight flight. So they're not going to be receptive to nutrition.
That's right. Mm. And so managing, identifying the stressors, we are meant to guard our thoughts and we are meant to address them. So in my first initial verse, it talked about conveying truth to our neighbors, how we feel about what we're talking about our feelings. It doesn't make it right or wrong, but we're meant to actually express how we feel, and there's something funny that happens. We feel better, we don't carry that stress, and then we either surrender it to God or we've expressed it. That's a physical action, and our digestive system improves. People with acute stress will get ulcers. People with chronic stress will get leaky gut, which are mini ulcers. They're like the mini donut holes or whatever. Mm. It's just one of those things where stress impacts that. So we fix the biome with the good bacteria. We get out of fight or flight, avoiding the food allergies, which sets up an environment for inflammation, which burns down the bacterial forest, is a really good place to start. I love that question.
Boy, that's fantastic. I know we've got another one on Facebook, and we've got a whole full call screen. I love seeing it. I think we've got 8 calls on the board, 7, 8 calls. We got to take a break here in a moment. I want you to say a word, though, when you say avoid food allergies. I know what you mean because I live there, but I mean for the person that doesn't know exactly what that means.
Well, I'm glad you're clarifying that because it's not really just food allergies. It's food sensitivities, food intolerances. A true allergy, when you go to the allergist, we rarely have true food allergies. So an allergist will check for IgE allergies, like a peanut allergy that can kill us, mm-hmm. or something that releases histamine where we get hives. Most food intolerances do not cause hives or anything. So it's basically food we can't digest all that effectively. So it's food sensitivities and food intolerances. You can get a blood test where they'll check for IgG, IgE, food reactions, and also getting kinesiologically tested or just doing a food avoidance. If you pay close attention, you'll be able to see that certain foods do not break down properly or have a negative consequence to your energy, your thought process, and your ability to sleep.
Mm. And even in your joints, you can feel that,
yes,
as well. So the common allergens are gluten, dairy, soy, right? Sugar is something you should stay away from. Anything else?
Gluten, yeah, corn. So
corn.
Especially if there's a family history of hip replacement, corn is actually one of the big challenges. So corn is another one. And anything that they are genetically modifying or have altered or changed could potentially eventually cause a problem because our immune system is wired to only attack the things that it doesn't recognize. So if the immune system is confused because you have a sleep disorder or a lot of stress, if you're sleep deprived, we all get confused. But if your immune system is confused, it'll start attacking it no matter what. But if they've altered it and our immune system doesn't recognize it, it's going to eventually attack it when we have stress in particular.
Boy,
think
that's
about how scary that is.
No kidding. So, Katie, we've got about 45 seconds to go out to break. So tee up the question and I'll have you ask it again on the other side of the break.
Yeah, I know we had mentioned a little bit about Parkinson's earlier in the show, and Christy just had a question if you would recommend anything for treating Parkinson's disease.
So we're going to hang on to that. And Luria, Michelle, Ray, you're so patient. I think you're being patient. I can't see your faces or hear you right now, but I'm thinking you're being very, very patient. I want so much to get to each of these calls as well. So don't go away. It's Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. We're going to answer as many of these questions as we can, and they're all good questions. Keep them coming. We'll be back in a minute. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. And just as a mention, Meredith Andrews, who just sang that song, I'm doing a conference with her and Stacey Eldridge. The three of us will be in St. Cloud end of September, beginning of October. The conference is short and powerful, Friday night and Saturday. And that information will be up on my Facebook page, but it's going to be awesome. I actually think it may sell out, be about 3,000 women. I hope you'll join us. It's called Thrive. Look it up. Google Bridging the Gap Thrive, and you'll find information on the conference. So it is today, our monthly edition of Health and Healing with Dr. Troy. I don't know if I've ever seen as many calls on our call screen before, so hang in there, hang on, be patient if you can, because we're also doing something called Facebook Live, and we're getting questions live via Facebook. And so my niece Katie is fielding these questions for Dr. Troy. Katie, what do you have?
Yeah, Abby wants to know if you can speak on food reflux, so the feeling of food being caught in her throat, not exactly heartburn. The doctors say nothing is wrong with her esophagus, and acid reducers have not helped. He recommend going on antidepressants, but she does not want to do that.
Don't do that right away. There's a lot of other potential, real simple physical factors that can do that. So when it comes to the feeling like the food is getting stuck in your throat, there still can be weakness. And when they do their tests, it just means there isn't a disease process there. And antidepressants are kind of their way of saying that there's something, like it's in your head, which actually might be true because it might be nerves not firing 100%. So two main things jump to mind here. So a lot of times our stomach can get caught up in our diaphragm, and this happens very, very commonly after exercising too soon, after eating. Sometimes if you have gone a long time without eating, the stomach kind of shrinks a little bit and it gets caught up on the diaphragm. So it's called a functional hiatal hernia. And what happens is the squeezing, every time you breathe, it squeezes the stomach, and you may release acid prematurely or at an incorrect time, causing an acid reflux type scenario, or it just may weaken the esophageal area enough, not enough for them to detect it on their lab equipment. So if you go under the left inner part of your rib cage and kind of push down there and there's some tenderness, that's a general sign that there may be some stomach caught up on the diaphragm. Someone who does what's called a hiatal hernia adjustment, a chiropractor, medical doctor, physical therapist, can actually pull that down, and it literally can correct it instantaneously. With it, 5 seconds later, you can breathe easier and you'll feel the strength come back, if that's all it is. The sleep disorder can also do that as well. So if there's headaches involved, that's a general sign that the occiput might be off. A chiropractor would need to fix that one, but you can get that corrected. There's a lot of structural things that can actually set that up. And the fact that they didn't find anything is a great sign for you that it's not a severe neurologic problem. It's just a functional neurologic problem.
Wow. I hope you can get some help with that. God bless you. We're going to take Luria, I think her name is, calling in from Grand Cayman. That's a first for us.
I will come to you, Luria, if you need help.
He's feeling the call. How are you today?
I am fine today, and it's a beautiful day in the Cayman Islands.
Wow. Honored to have you calling and listening. What's your question for Dr. Troy today?
Okay. I'm heading towards 50, and I've had quite a few health problems in my life. I had a hysterectomy earlier, and right now I had an issue with my gallbladder. I had pain in the pit of my stomach, and it would go straight through to my back. I had it maybe for a year and a half, and finally I went to a surgeon, and he diagnosed that I needed to take the gallbladder out. I went for a second opinion. They did a HIDA scan and discovered that the gallbladder was a non-functioning, so he was, I guess, correct. So it's going to be a year since the gallbladder is out, but I still have pain. And then I don't sleep well. I sleep maybe 2 hours at a time, so I wake like 3-4 times in the night. Since the gallbladder has been out, the doctor told me that, you know, not to eat 3 hours before I go to bed, so I don't. But I still feel so very tired. Mm-hmm. And then my other doctor, the gynecologist that I go to now, he want to put me on hormones, and I don't want to take them. So my question is, you know, could the stomach problem be causing my non-sleep? You know,
Wow.
I'm not quite sure where I'm at with that.
Thank you so much for your call. What do you say, Dr. Troy?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of factors here. The unfortunate thing is we really do need a little bit more information on the physical part of it, but I'm going to walk you through a couple possibilities here. Usually when someone has a positive Heidel scan like that, it means that the bile flow is not working. There is an herbal a product that you can take called milk thistle that actually helps with bile flow as far as the motility. So it'll help push the bile. It's a general sign your liver is not pushing the bile properly. You're not detoxifying properly. And most likely with the sleep disorder, it's kind of like what we talked about before. There is a sleep disorder that has to be addressed. And when you're in deep sleep, that's when we start to get the nerves firing back down to our digestive system. My guess is when you have the bile not working like that, that's where I just spoke on hiatal hernias functional. It almost always, 80, 90% of the time, causes a functional hiatal hernia. And that's the pain that you're going to be feeling in between where the ribs come together. And the gallbladder was a part of it. But also when the pH is not properly balanced, when the stomach, pancreas, and gallbladder or bile come together, then we start to see increased tension in that digestive system. Someone needs to pull down. There might be a chiropractor locally there that can go in there and pull down on and get the stomach where it's supposed to be. And then it's very important to do a liver-friendly diet for 28 days. If you email my clinic, we will send you that liver-friendly diet as far as what to eat so that you can start to heal the stomach, liver, and intestinal tract. And it is going to be very important to actually fix the sleep disorder. My guess is there's going to be a nice big spasm muscle on the right side of the occiput, just off center of the spine, that goes down into the right shoulder. And that one, when that's tight like that, it'll cause a collapsing of your airway, which is not allowing for the recovery. And so the hormone part of this is also important. And so hormones are broken down in the liver. So you may need hormones. That actually might be true. But the problem is if the liver is backed up, taking hormones right now will help with the brain, but not with the digestive tract. So those two things have to be managed. So my guess would be hormone support of some type may be necessary. But if you can get the liver working better, and things like caffeine, spicy foods, tomatoes, and acidic, even healthy foods that are acidic, can really be detrimental. Sugar is one of the most inflammatory components to this too. So if you email the clinic, we'll actually send you the diet to follow to help with this. But hopefully, I don't know if they even have chiropractors down in the Grand Cayman, but generally speaking, they're the ones that can help with the occiput adjustment to get the sleep disorder fixed. And then the hormone stuff does have to be managed once the liver system is working better. When that pain goes away, then you can address whether or not you even need the hormones.
Okay. So, Luria, we're going to have the show on the show page today, Dr. Troy's Clinic, and you'll find the email there. You can send them an email and ask for that liver-friendly diet. We're going to take another call. And I see, Michelle, we're going to take you next. Ray, I see you. Marie, I see you. Pray you can hold on. I think I have your question if you're able, if you need to hang up. And then we're going to get some Facebook questions from Katie as well. Michelle, thanks for holding in your wonderful patience. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you. I at the age of 63, prior to that, I never had any health problems ever, other than I had eating disorders. And during that time, for 14 years, I was in recovery from eating disorders. I've lost a significant amount of weight. After age of 63, due to, I think, extreme stress in my life, personal stress, I acquired adrenal fatigue and then have been kind of and gaining weight real slowly over the 3.5 years, just a slow gain, like 6 pounds a year, like that, but still eating my weight in measured food, no sugar, no white flour, no gluten, anything as such. When you're in recovery, those are the things you don't eat. But all my weight has been gained around the middle. I since found out that I have low immune, low iron, low ferritin, low triglycerides, and so on and so forth. Initially, they told me that I had Hashimoto's, and now have re-diagnosed me with anemia. And so I'm just kind of wondering what you think about that.
Yeah, that's very common when we have the eating disorders. One of the things that happens is we become very, very deficient in minerals and antioxidants. So there actually is quite an answer to this, but also it's going to take a little while. But what you want to do is support the adrenals. Now, adrenals need protein. And so does anemia. So we need to get your protein levels up. And if you can't take it in your diet that you've got structured, then you take it in shake form. So pea protein, whey protein. We just want to increase your protein a little bit more for the adrenal glands, and we need to get the antioxidants up. So if we're going to do it in a non-caloric way, you can do it through supplementation, but we need the iron, protein, and antioxidants to be brought up. And specifically, glutathione and vitamin D are very, very important antioxidants. So generally speaking, the supplement I mentioned before, the Essentials, has alpha-lipoic acid and N-acetylcysteine, which are two of the main ingredients that make glutathione. So getting on a good, high-potent antioxidant supplement doesn't carry the caloric intake, but will start to help with the immune system side of this. And Hashimoto's is basically a confused immune system. So fish oil, glutathione, and vitamin D are the main three regulators of that immune system, managing the stress and then getting the adrenal glands up and running. So the adrenal glands may require more B vitamins, B5 and B6 in particular, to help with them, and they love amino acids and protein. So it takes a while to bring those levels back up. I'm going to say anywhere from 6 months to 2 years to do it slowly and purposefully, but you should notice some changes with your energy as far as the adrenal stuff within the first month if you start getting those things corrected.
And I'm telling you, 6 months goes by fast. When you apply yourself to some of these things and you have the goal of improved health, you blink and 6 months are over and you've gained ground. And if you put it off, 6 months are going to pass anyway. You're going to think, what have I been doing? So it's just so worth it digging into some of these things. Okay, Katie, what do you have?
Yeah, Monica here has a great question, but I'm actually going to hand this one over to Dr. Troy just so I don't, you know, ruin any of those big medical words there.
Okay. Any advice for myeloperoxidase P, ANSA, vasculitis combined with inflammatory arthritis? Methotrexate isn't doing good, and I don't want to keep taking prednisone. Thanks. Okay. So actually, the conversation I just had is very relevant here. Methotrexate is very hard in the kidneys. So you want to make sure that you're getting tested for that. If that's not helping, the arthritis is a challenge like we talked about earlier in the program. But the P. ANSA vasculitis, generally for me, that's an autoimmune. So make sure that they've checked for antibodies. If you have antibodies against that, then what we're looking at is the autoimmune scenario again, vitamin D, glutathione, fish oil, avoiding the stressors in life, chemical and mental, and getting your immune system less confused. So there's generally the eight factors we talked about earlier that confuse the immune system: hormone imbalance, vitamin D deficiencies, and food allergies, mineral imbalances, toxicities, mental stress, and then change of seasons when it comes to hormones, whether it be menopause or the beginning of menses or pregnancy. Those things are all triggers for this type of scenario. So it's very, very important to take a look at which of those factors. And fish oil is one of the biggest things you can actually look at for this particular type of scenario, just because of the inflammatory properties of it. And prednisone, if it is helping, but you don't want to stay out long term, which I understand completely, then you want to look at the best ways to manage your actual adrenal glands as well, with the cortisol being released. When we have excessive amounts of cortisol, we gain that weight in the midsection area. When we don't have enough, we have an inflammatory cascade that's being released. So blood sugar regulation is very important, because insulin inhibits the cortisol, essentially. They're opposing hormones. So I know it's a lot in a short period of time, but treat it like an autoimmune. There are many books out there. This is for the last caller as well. Many books that talk about autoimmune, because there's so much more research coming out there, the triggers of autoimmune and which antioxidants to take and how to support the adrenal glands. So there's a multitude of books on the market right now.
So good. All right, we're pausing for our final break here. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to Dr. Troy. Health and Healing with Dr. Troy every single month. We're so honored to have him for a couple hours today. We've got one segment left. When we come back, are there any more questions, Katie, appearing on the screen? Maybe there will by the time we get back. So we're going to talk also about gut health and what are some of the common issues, the spinoffs, when our gut isn't healthy. I know we touched on it, but I'd love for you just to kind of encapsulate that conversation. And then you started out talking about our thought life, our personalities, and how they impact their health. And I know you came armed with some information I feel like we need to hear today. So we're going to tackle those when we come back. If we have more time, there's a few more questions on the board that I'll grab as well. Don't go away. More with Dr. Troy in a moment.
I'm
I don't know how you hear that song and don't move a little bit. We're all swaying in the studio here. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. So honored to have Dr. Troy Spurrell in studio. We get him once a month to answer your health questions. So fantastic because he's a man of faith. He cares so much about your health. And we always address the health triad, the emotional aspect, the physical aspect, and the chemical aspect of what you're dealing with. And I remember one of the last times he was in off the air, I said to him, I said, you know, I don't want to take advantage or anything, but if by any chance my head ends up under your armpit, will you just give me a yank? But, you know, I would never do that, right, Chrissy? My sister's like, I hope you didn't do that. Okay, so we've got one segment left, and we're going to answer a few more questions. Katie, you had a good question that Dr. Troy would love to answer.
Yeah, Denise, looks like she's from Pennsylvania, and she is looking for a good alternative healthcare practitioner. I know, like her, along with a lot of other people, are wondering what kind of qualifications they should look for.
Yeah, this is a great question. So for me personally, how I've been trained, there's a couple different areas. And so if you can find someone in this realm of functional medicine, mm-hmm. so a medical doctor or a chiropractor or a practitioner, a naturopathic practitioner who is trained in functional medicine, that's a great place to start. Also, a lot of chiropractors have taken advanced training in a program called a functional neurology program. They're very good problem solvers. And so functional neurology, a diplomate in functional neurology. There's an institute down in Georgia called the Carrick Institute that I am a big fan of his teaching. I took that 20 years ago, and it really helped me understand a lot of how the body works from the brain's perspective. And then applied kinesiology, generally speaking, chiropractors who do applied kinesiology are very good-hearted people. You do need to have discernment as far as where they come from, I personally believe, as far as their faith and everything. But if you find a good applied kinesiology chiropractor, they generally have a heart to find the root cause, and they can start to correlate dysfunction internally in the body with the physical findings. So they can actually test muscles over the entire body and start to go down a path that may not be able to be detected on lab testing for quite some time. But the chiropractors and medical doctors, the chiropractors in particular that do the functional neurology and the functional medicine, seem to me to be solving the majority of the problems out there that are challenged. Our clinic is primarily people that have been everywhere who haven't been able to get help. And then we help solve those problems. And I am telling you right now, we are not the only clinic in North America doing this. There are a lot of them, and there's one in every state. I guarantee you that. So the functional medicine is the key, the functional neurology, applied kinesiology, and I was forgetting what my other degree is in. Oh, molecular biology. But that one, that's more the nutrition stuff.
Who cares?
So,
molecular biology, that's all. Sorry. Yeah. That's amazing. Sorry, just had to tease you for...
I'm very teasable.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Okay, talk about, we touched on the gut health thing, but give us a bit of a synopsis on when our gut is not healthy, because I think it was probably surprising for some to say, wait, migraines could relate to gut health and focus issues. So talk about some of the spin-off issues that happen when your gut's not healthy.
So almost anything, that's the reality.
Wow.
So it can be anxiety, depression, very, very common with gut health. It can be fatigue, lethargy. It can be that foggy brain. When you wake up and you feel like Homer Simpson, that can be more of a gut issue too. Hormone imbalances can start from gut issues. Fibromyalgia can start from a gut issue. Lack of motivation can be a gut issue as well. And then if you are prone to straining muscles, especially hip flexors and hamstrings, that can be a gut issue.
Wow.
And so there's a lot of different scenarios that can lead to that. A lot of adrenal stress, people will read about adrenal stress and say, oh, that's me. And mental, chemical, and physical stress can all cause that. But one of the most common things we see is inflammation in the digestive tract causing adrenal stress. And so once you have adrenal stress, we crave one of two things, salt or sugar. And then we start down a whole pathway. So let me ask you this. Do we have a problem with overconsumption of sugar in this country? Diabetes, obesity. So obesity, diabetes, heart disease, all can be linked back to some degree to the gut, and including cancer, because that's where our antioxidants are meant to be absorbed. and taken in. So a lot of the top 10 degenerative diseases that actually get us, if you will, in the United States, Canada, North America, the gut plays into all of them.
My goodness, that's absolutely amazing. Okay, we're going to be wrapping in prayer in about 3 minutes. That's not a lot of time. We could really devote a whole show to this topic that you came in with. So sorry to give you 3 minutes, but say what you want about thought life, personalities, and how they play into health.
Well, what I want to do is talk briefly on automatic negative thoughts and just realize that they just shut your body down. But I want to give you specifics, like all or nothing thinking, like saying you always do that or he never does that. That is an example of an automatic negative thought. When you have that, that statement is causing a negative chemical reaction in your body.
Wow.
When you overgeneralize, when you basically see the negative of every situation instead of the positive, just focusing on that negative, even if it's only 5%, basically has a negative physical consequence. So the words that you hear coming out of your mouth are very, very important. And we can start to tell right away, based on how people speak, which one of these filter problems or negative thoughts are dominating their life. Emotional reasoning, you say, I feel like an idiot, so I really must be one. Just catch your verbiage, because a lot of times your self-limiting belief, what you actually think about yourself, comes out in the words. And people think that when they say something and I say, well, let's check this, vulnerability or self-condemnation, it's not because I'm intuitively just, I mean, I'm connected, but it's not, I'm actually listening to what they're saying.
Wow.
And about themselves. Mm. And they're leading me to that path. And so when I ask questions, they respond. That's what brings me to what they actually think about themselves or other people.
If I could jump in, and when he says, let's check this, he's looking at, this emotional weakness. And if you, he has you put, like, my neck and my jaw are bad places, and he'll have me put my hands on that place and say, I'm afraid of failure, or whatever it is you're picking up on. And if I show weakness, there's something there.
There's something to potentially work on, yes.
Yeah, keep going.
And then when it comes to how we think, there's four different baseline personalities. And a lot of people just wish everyone would think like me. If everyone just thought like me, then the world would be a better place.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is there's four main styles. And there's a lot of trainings out there that will go through these four styles. But I'm going to use the verbiage in this one because it's my favorite. Sue Hawks in the cities here in the Twin Cities taught me this many years ago. And so basically we've got these four styles of how we think. Controllers. They're a controlling style with their mindset. They're all about results. We've got analyzers. They're the detail people. They think in their head about details. And then we have supporters. Supporters are people who basically want to take a back seat, and they get their value out of supporting you. And then there's promoters. Those are the people who are the life of the party, if you will. They think out loud. So do you guys know anyone who thinks out loud? And yeah, everyone always looks at them. And so the promoters are the ones who think out loud. Analyzers think in their head. Controllers are people who are based on results, and they can be they're very direct. So I'm going to use an example here. This is not a political statement at all, but if you look at Donald Trump, he's easy to identify. He's a promoter controller. He thinks out loud and he's direct. Now, controllers will offend supporters easily. And analyzers will get really upset with promoters because they're not thinking, they're not keeping their thoughts to themselves. So we always try and change other people, but there is no right or wrong way to actually communicate or think. You just need to recognize, or we want to recognize, that people think differently. And when we recognize that, I have more information on how to communicate with these people. But if you want to understand your spouse, because generally we are attracted to the exact opposite. Generally speaking, because their values, the things that we love about them, are stuff that doesn't come naturally to us.
Mm.
But then after 10 years of marriage, those are the things that we say, why don't you do it like me? So what initially attracted us to them, yes. And so that's where we start to see a communication breakdown. And that's what leads to dysfunction, which will lead to disease, whether it be marriage or internally as an actual health problem.
Next time, Lord willing, let's do this where we don't take calls for the first half hour and let you unpack this, because there is a lot more here, I have the feeling. Well, you've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson. In just a bit, you will find a podcast of today's program up on our website at myfaithradio.com. I hope you found this encouraging. Dr. Troy will be back with us again next month. And if you have questions that you want us to store up for next month, email me, Susie@myfaithradio.com. In the subject line, put question for Dr. Troy. And remember this, the Lord wants you to last long and finish strong. He's the one who'll keep you strong to the end. Have a great day.